Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Good day, Mark.
Hi, Mike.
We're going to shift. The past couple of weeks been focusing on sort of common ambulatory problems. We're going to talk for a moment. This week, you found a poem from the New England Journal that talks about strokes. The majority of ischemic strokes are due to cardioembolism, a large vessel, atherothromboembolism, small vessel occlusive disease, or other unusual mechanisms. However, after all is said and done, even after extensive workup, many ischemic strokes occur without a well-defined cause. These guys are labeled as cryptogenic strokes. There are difficulties in terms of how do you manage these strokes since you don't really know what causes them. Options for anticoagulation have expanded greatly over the past couple of decades. It wasn't terribly long ago that we had just Coumadin, aspirin, and heparin. Now there's a whole potpourri of things. This means there are more agents for the prevention and management, particularly of thromboembolic disease. So there are heparins and vitamin K antagonists and anticoagulants that are directly target the enzyme activity of thrombin and factor 10A, yada, yada, yada. One of these is a drug called dabigatran. It's marketed under the trade name of Pradexa. It's a direct thrombin inhibitor. There are a few cautions about this drug before we talk about the benefits. One is that it has a zillion interactions with other medications, so you have to be careful. That's a Michael Wilkes exaggeration. I'm not sure there are actually a zillion, but there are many to be cautious of. The second caution is that it can cause problems if you discontinue dabigatran abruptly. It increases the risk of thrombotic events, meaning that you need to choose your patients who are going to be compliant and understand the dangers of all of this. But at the end of the day, does this drug have any benefit in patients suffering their first cryptogenic stroke? This is in a poem that you found. It's an article that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, 2019. It starts on page 1906. The clinical question that it's answering is, in patients with a cryptogenic stroke, is dabigatran more effective than aspirin for the prevention of a second stroke? Mark?
Yeah, this was a randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled trial, and they identified patients who were 60 years or older who had experienced one of these cryptogenic embolic strokes in the past 3 months, or in the past 6 months if they had at least one vascular risk factor, and patients 18 to 59 years, so younger patients, if they'd had an embolic cryptogenic stroke in the past 3 months and had at least one vascular risk factor. Patients underwent a standard evaluation, including Holter monitoring, and they were allowed to have no more than 6 minutes of AFib during 20 hours of monitoring. So there were 5,390 patients, and they were randomized to get aspirin 100 milligrams once daily or dabigatran twice daily in an age-appropriate dose. The groups were balanced at the start of the study, and analysis was by intention to treat, which is good. The mean age of the patients was 64 years, and about 13% had patent foramen ovale. Although only a few patients were completely lost to follow-up, more than a quarter in each group discontinued the study drug during the follow-up period. So there was no significant difference between groups with regard to the primary efficacy outcome of recurrent stroke, 4.1% per year with dabigatran versus 4.8 with aspirin. That was not statistically significant difference. The only individual outcome for which there was a statistically significant difference was disabling stroke, which was 0.6% versus 0.9% with aspirin. The number needed to treat would be 333 per year. They did subgroup analyses post hoc by age and found a trend toward greater benefit with increasing age with the dabigatran, and that became significant after age 75. There was no difference in major bleeding between groups, but more clinically relevant non-major bleeds with the dabigatran, number needed harm of about 140 per year. If you look at the survival curves, you can kind of think there may be an increasing benefit of the dabigatran after a year of treatment, but this is that's really just post hoc kind of data dredging. The study was funded by the maker of dabigatran, which did all the data collection, analysis, and manuscript writing. So, you know, they were trying very hard to find any benefit in what is largely a negative trial. More bleeding, number needed to harm of 140, a small decrease in disabling stroke, number needed to treat of 330 per year. And, you know, so, you know, you have to treat a lot of people to potentially see any benefit. Bottom line, dabigatran was no better at preventing a second stroke, which was the primary outcome in this 19-month study.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, I guess perhaps with the number needed to treat of 333, it suggests that maybe there are subgroups, and you suggested that one subgroup may be the older population. But it's disappointing to me. This is an editorial comment here, doesn't represent you or anybody else. But, you know, why is the New England Journal of Medicine publishing a study that is completely controlled, managed, data collected, et cetera, written by the manufacturers of a drug? It just doesn't make any sense to me. One thing that I just thought we haven't talked about in a while, and it would just take a minute of your time, but you had mentioned before, as you were talking about this, that this was an intention to treat analysis, and you made the editorial comment that that was good. And it may be a good time to just quickly remind listeners what intention to treat means.
Yeah, sure. It's when you do a trial and you randomize patients, you analyze the data based on which group they were originally assigned to, and not whether they took the medication, whether they crossed over. You basically try to use the data that you have based on the original randomization, which is more somewhat more conservative and also more consistent with real world. If you use per protocol analysis, then that tends to inflate the apparent benefit.
Good summary. Thanks, Mark. My intention is to end this recording right now. Have a good week, and we will talk with you in a week. Thanks.
Sounds good.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.